Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that surprises itself pretty much every week with its ability to keep on keeping on well into its third decade. Woof. We've reviewed hundreds, if not thousands, of movies since the late 90s, and we've experienced the occasional surprise, sometimes good, sometimes bad. We'll talk about one of those surprises on this week's show, as well as discussing a documentary feature titled Richland that played at the most recent Spokane International Film Festival and is enjoying a run at the Magic Lantern Theater. Finally, Nathan will give us his reaction to the Dev Patel-directed feature Monkey Man. Let's start with a surprise. Okay, we found out pretty quickly that The Surprise is a film that is scheduled to open a week from now, though no doubt there will be other advanced screenings. The film is titled The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, and it's labeled up front, based on a true story, which can be seen as much as a warning as it is simple information. Directed by Guy Ritchie, and team written by Ritchie and three others who took the story from a 2014 book by author Damian Lewis, the film tells the story, a very loose telling, of a secret World War II mission called Operation Postmaster that involved the attempted sinking but ultimate hijacking of a support ship for German submarine operations. Using a diverse cast led by the British actor Henry Cavill and the American actor Alan Ritchson, Ritchie gives us a film with plenty of action, yet with a tone that falls somewhere between being respectful to historical events and flippant in the manner of such Ritchie films as Snatch and Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. The result is a mishmash of graphic violence and, to be honest, a screenplay that is so by the numbers that it feels in the end, and this was the biggest surprise of all, a bit boring.
A bit. I thought it was real boring. But going back to the way in which we saw this movie, this screen unseen gimmick that you alluded to at the top, I want to talk about that a little more, because frankly, it's more interesting than the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, which good luck remembering that name. But basically what this is, and I think it's been going on for about a year, maybe a little bit less time.
And we've been avoiding it. Yeah.
I just really haven't taken the time to go. I don't know if I was avoiding it necessarily, but basically what it is AMC puts a showtime on the calendar. It's usually on a Monday night, and you don't know what the movie is going to be until you actually show up at the theater.
Other theaters do this as well.
Yeah,
Regal has it too.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, it's not a novel concept. Right. Film festivals have been doing surprise screenings
for
years. But basically, the concept here is that you can kind of guess, I guess, based on release dates and other kind of context clues, what it's going to be. But you really don't know until the movie starts what you're getting into.
But I have to say, our being on the West Coast, there's a whole Reddit thread.
That's
that
true.
Talks,
you could look up spoilers if you wanted to. And I knew going into this particular screening, it was going to be one of three options because we knew the movie was at least 2 hours long and that it was rated R. And I said to you, because we just happened to see this in the same screening, I said, this is either going to be the new Alex Garland film Civil War, the new Luca Guadagnino movie Challengers, or the new Guy Ritchie movie, I have to look at the title again, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. And I said, and if it's the Guy Ritchie film, I'm going to be disappointed. And guess what? It was the Guy Ritchie film. So that's sort of the gamble you take, right? And you also, a lot of the time, don't know if the movie's good or bad because it hasn't come out yet.
Right.
And so sometimes, as in was the case with this movie, you don't know what the word of mouth is.
But that's the best part of it. You don't know. You go in with no expectations at all. Well, once you find out it's Guy Ritchie, you obviously
have
expectations.
Well, and obviously, I mean, you're sitting through the trailers and they're all action trailers. So immediately you know, oh, okay, it's definitely going to be an action
flick. It's not going to be a romance.
And I think the theater was pretty full, though, for a Monday night screening. And
this
so
is one of the smaller houses,
I think they're doing the right thing by trying to bring in people. You've mentioned the whole notion of showing things unknown or unseen at film festivals. And I mean, those are great when you
remember
talk about the Secret Fest
at Spokane, at the Seattle Film Festival.
They would find films that for whatever reasons, they had IP issues or music score issues that had never gotten a widescreen release.
And
Barbie, Karen Carpenter.
Oh, Superstar,
movie.
The Tom Hanks
right,
film.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Or had a release, but for various reasons had not been re-released for 50 years in some cases.
That's really cool, too. Well, and obviously that's not what AMC is doing, because the movie that you're going to see will be out in wide release within the next couple of weeks, at least. That's usually.
So it's one way to try to get word of mouth out there. Oh,
and
you know, and
if this is your kind of thing, it's a fun idea. The idea that
I like to be surprised.
Here's my thing. When it comes to surprises, I don't really like surprises.
I don't like surprise parties.
Same. I'll go to a surprise party. I do not want to be the subject of the surprise party.
Yet Mary Pat likes pranks.
You know, I do.
Which is a form of surprise, I would say. I think we've talked about this, that I like going into a movie as cold as possible. If I can avoid seeing trailers, I will not watch the trailer. If I see that there's a movie coming out by a director I like or a writer I like or I hear good buzz, I don't want to know anything. As little as possible going in. I usually don't read reviews before I see a movie. I want to go in fresh. The difference here is that I don't know what the movie's going to be at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a bummer when you make a night of it and then it's something that you probably wouldn't go see under normal circumstances.
But
like
Nathan,
this.
You see everything. So this screen
well, I see
unseen,
less than I used to.
I know. I mean, I don't know. I'm going to have to push back on that one, honestly. But let's talk about what we did see.
Okay.
First of all, unfortunately, we saw this film in the least desirable AMC theater. So all movies today are dark. If you see Theater 10 show up on your app, I say run.
Yeah. It not only was dark, it looked like it was shot through gauze. And that's not a Guy Ritchie trademark.
Well, but I also think that even if you had seen this under the best possible circumstances, you know, on a perfectly crystal clear IMAX screen, I still think the action in this movie would be murky and kind of hard to see because
it's taking place at night.
Yeah, the whole thing is that the last heist of the movie, which goes on for 45 minutes or so, is all shot at night and on the water. And it's just dark and uninvolving visually. Mm-hmm. I don't think the fact that the projection was clearly dimmer than usual. The whole thing had this just kind of murky quality where I couldn't see what was going on. I couldn't tell who was who, where they were in relation to the other people, which in an action scene is kind of important.
About the only ones you could tell was Cavill, simply because the way he looks with his cool beard, and Alan Ritchson, the Reacher guy.
Because
he's
huge.
Know. Yes, exactly.
Well, and I was actually glad to see each of them on the screen because
I wasn't
sure what Alan Richardson, I mean, he's
Richson.
Like, Richson has a specific look. And so, you know, how are they going to use him to maximum effect? And I think they did manage to do that in this particular film because he is supposed to be sort of the enforcer and the heavy. But at the same time, he has this skill with a bow and arrow, which, you know, somehow features in the plot.
Yeah, and I had never seen Alan Richardson in anything. I was not familiar with him. So the second he shows up on screen and he's this brick wall of a man, I was like, who is that guy? And you know what? He's got genuine charisma. Like, he is a movie star. Like, my eyes went directly to him. He has the same kind of sparkle in his eyes as Henry Cavill does. There are other actors in this that don't have that same amount of charisma, I would say. But this whole movie, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, just feels like a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox. I mean, this is basically Inglourious Basterds, but like the C-minus version of that movie. I mean, it covers so much of the same ground and copies so many of the same plot beats. And again, Tarantino is not a paragon of originality, don't get me wrong.
And
Guy Ritchie has often, since his career kind of started, you know, in the 90s, has often been dogged as sort of a watered-down Tarantino. But so many beats in this are like, this particular villain is clearly supposed to be Christoph Waltz's Hans Landa from Inglourious Basterds, but not anywhere near as scary, not anywhere near as interesting. And the whole movie just feels like that. Like, it's the Dirty Dozen as well, but not anywhere near as good as the Dirty Dozen.
No, and you know, given all the technical difficulties with the film, I think the major problem is one of tone. You expect Snatch and Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels or The Gentleman.
Or the Sherlock Holmes movies.
Right, exactly. Those movies move and there's a sense of humor and nothing is ever taken seriously. And he, for whatever reason, this is based upon real people. And at the very end, we hear the real stories.
We get the
about
pictures
the real,
sort
real,
of people, yeah.
Sort of, except that actually the fact is that most of them died in the war. And so it's caught between, you know, the flippant part of it and the serious yeah. nature of these guys. You know, yeah. we're showing too much respect. So it didn't know what it wanted to yeah. be, I don't think, in my
opinion.
Well,
and I also think the central joke of Ritchie's filmography has grown stale to me, which is these super tough guys being surrounded by grievous bodily harm and explosions and all of this kind of violence, and then not having any kind of reaction, that blasé reaction. Yeah. Like, that's every Guy Ritchie movie, and I'm kind of over it, and it didn't work here for me.
Yeah,
at all.
Well, I don't think it worked for any of the three of us.
So not a particularly good surprise.
But it is violent, right. violent, violent.
Oh, it was
true.
Violent.
If you could see it.
Yeah. Any rate, that was our discussion of the screen unseen surprising showing called The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to talk about the documentary feature Richland and the big screen action flick Monkey Man. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I talked about the surprise showing of an event labeled Screen Unseen, which the three of us saw Monday night. Let's now turn to something a bit more expected. First, the documentary feature Richland, and then the narrative action flick Monkey Man. Let me begin by sharing the intentions of Richland director Irene Lustig, who said she wasn't interested in making a film that simply pitted pro versus anti-nuclear camps against one another. Richland, she wrote, does not provide easy answers, a policy position, a simple critique of the nuclear industry, or interviews with nuclear experts. Instead, it does the messier work of creating a patiently unfolding space where divergent voices and positions can coexist, investing in a cinematic form that gently holds multiple entangled histories in one place. And I'll take a breath after that. So we learn about the town, about the indigenous tribes who still hold a claim on it, the history of the plant that provided the means to bomb Japan and end World War II, the workers who still labor there, and the town folk who rally behind a high school whose football helmet logo bears the image of a mushroom cloud. The film is a slice of life, some of which is ordinary, some of which is disturbing, but always in a way that we in this part of the country should find familiar.
As you indicated, Dan, we did talk about this briefly before because it was part of the Spokane International Film Festival offerings. And as everyone knows, I gravitate toward these documentaries. And I didn't know what to expect the first time I saw this because, you know, was it going to be just sort of a boring, linear telling of the history of this town? And I was really impressed, honestly, with what Irene Lustig did with this story, because it is a story. It is a story of real people and how they were affected by this and how there was this plausible deniability about what was going on. So in some respects, I thought this was the perfect time to feature Richland because, one, we have Oppenheimer and Richland, yes. the Hanford nuclear plant, played a role in the construction of Fat Man, the bomb that detonated
Nagasaki.
Right. And also, interestingly enough, and Dan always says when I start my remarks with that, he said, we'll decide if it's interesting. But we happened to catch the premiere of a play titled Witchland that was written by Richland-born Tim Mulligan, who some of you might recognize his name because he was a Gonzaga law student who won more than one Oscar contest sponsored by the Spokesman Review back
yep,
in the day.
Yep.
So he wrote a play titled Witchland that is about Richland also, and it does connect to some of these same themes. I should also point out that Witchland is available as a graphic novel. So I think this is a timely event to look back at what happened in this particular town. And I'm sure people who grew up there, the downwinders who were subjected to the fallout and so forth, in some respects, this film also reminded me of Zone of Interest. Because there was all this stuff going on. So, for example, the dads who worked at the area, as it was called, you know, had to take these periodic urine tests. And everybody just accepted
and they
that as a
really
normal part
why.
Of their job,
you know,
their job requirements and so forth. So I think that this is a timely release of this film. I enjoyed it isn't the right word exactly.
Appreciated it.
I appreciated it very much. And I think that people who have lived in Eastern Washington will appreciate it as well.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing that Mary Pat is not talking about is that in terms of Witchland, the Tim Mulligan play, it was produced originally in San Diego. Then it was produced again in Palm Springs and both got great reviews. We saw it this last week in
Off-Broadway.
Off-Broadway
Hopefully
in New York.
At some point it will come to the Pacific Northwest.
And is that W-I-T-C-H?
Yes.
Witchland.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a scary event kind of play in which people, by the way, Mary Pat, I want to say that was interesting. So at any rate,
there we go.
There's two thumbs up for Richland, and anybody who saw it at SPIFF knows about it also. At any rate, that was our discussion of the documentary feature Richland, which is playing at the Magic Lantern. Let's now let Nathan tell us about the Dev Patel directed action film Monkey Man, which on the basis of the trailers we saw looks like the India version of John Wick.
I knew you were going to say John Wick, and it seems like every review of Monkey Man is bringing up John Wick, and I am delighted to tell you that the movie itself name drops John Wick as if it knew it was getting ahead of the comparisons. There's a moment where the Dev Patel character gets brought into this arsenal where, you know, he's picking out which gun he's going to take to go and do his vengeance. And the guy, you know, says, oh, you want to be John Wick? Take this gun. And there's a lot of other movies you're going to be thinking about watching Monkey Man. I mean, it follows the very traditional martial arts revenge movie where the guy tries to fight, the villain gets knocked down. There's a big, long training montage where, you know, he has this sage leader who sort of convinces him, like, this is how you have to train. And then he goes back and gets closer to the bad guy than he did the first time. So it's very familiar. I think what makes Monkey Man interesting, beyond the fact that it's Dev Patel, who you don't
who's
think
had a
of,
very interesting career.
And I think we can talk about that, but you don't necessarily associate him with action films.
No.
But he's very convincing in this movie. Part of the plot of Monkey Man is that he sort of makes money on the side in these underground fighting rings where he wears this monkey mask and essentially plays the role within these wrestling matches as the guy that gets knocked down every time. And so that's kind of part of his superpower here. It's not so much that he can
I mean that he gets back up as a superpower?
Exactly. It's not so much that he beats these guys. It's that he can take a licking and keep on ticking, basically. And what I like so much about this is that it's not the most original thing in the world, but Dev Patel as a filmmaker has a lot of energy. And that's what I really appreciated about Monkey Man. It's not reinventing the wheel in any way, but you get the sense that the guy behind the camera really had a passion to tell this story and really wanted to communicate it as viscerally as he possibly could. And it's a much more political film than I thought it was going to be. It's a story about beyond the revenge component. We find out, of course, why he wants revenge as the movie goes on. But it's a story about false prophets and nationalist politics and how those things displace people and indoctrinate them and exploit them, essentially. And so it almost feels like, you know, Dev Patel is trying to make a statement about, I think, about the world, but also about India in particular, which is not what I anticipated walking into this. I thought it was going to be kind of a brainless action movie. And I would have been fine with that because it is well made. And so I'll be really curious to see what Dev Patel, the director.
Yeah, that is fascinating. Yeah.
Because based on, you know, he's a former child actor.
Right.
Who's,
Slumdog
you know,
Millionaire.
Yeah.
Life of
Pi. He was such a kid in Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah.
You know, we see him years later in The Green Knight in particular.
Oh,
and
yeah,
it's like, oh, my God, he's great. grown up.
Yeah.
This is a man now.
Yeah. But he still has that
fresh
that
face,
lanky,
sort of
hangdog quality about him that I think makes him the right fit for this role, because this particular character isn't supposed to be an action star right out of the gate. In that sense, he isn't John Wick.
Mm-hmm.
He has to be unassuming then convincing.
So what
at the
end. We think about the fact it's almost like we just saw trailers with Cate Blanchett, for example, playing in this action film? I mean,
Borderlands.
Must every actor now have it on their resume that they've been an action star, whether it's Brie Larson or I'm thinking of Alyssa Vikander. I mean, these women are so
Tomb Raider.
Women are so slight. I can't imagine them fighting anyone under any circumstances, but it's almost like you have to have that now.
Well, it's, you know, Sigourney Weaver and
at least Sigourney Weaver's 6 foot tall.
Linda Hamilton paved the way, I suppose.
Yeah, that's true. She had biceps, if you'll recall.
That's true. Well, I think that what's interesting about that is that, I mean, actors love a challenge. And what's more challenging than having to put yourself in a position where you have to be physically imposing and then, you know, take on those
stunts in a convincing way. But some actors and actresses can do it. Charlize Theron in Mad Max Fury Road, she was great at Furiosa.
Or The Old Guard, that was an action film that she
but
was
But others, in. Not so much.
Yeah,
but,
no, I think Dev Patel works in this. I had the same questions that you had of, oh, really? He's going to do the John Wick thing now? But I think it does work.
So, is the audience for this film like your typical sort of action film? I mean, because you said it's more multi-layered than you anticipated.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that if you do go to this for the action scenes, I don't think that you'll be disappointed.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, because you've been really critical of a lot of action films lately.
Yes.
Particularly the one we talked about the first half of the show.
Where it said, can you please, if you're going to stage action, will you let me see it?
Mm-hmm.
I think that Dev Patel as a filmmaker is more enamored of shaky cam than I am. There are some scenes in this where I thought, you know, calm down the visuals a little bit. But again, I just think that there's just an energy to this filmmaking. There's just a pummeling quality to it that I think works really well. And it fits, too, because he's a messy fighter. He is not, you know.
He's not John Wick.
He's not. So, you know, he's getting beat up just as much as the bad guys. So, yeah, I say take a chance on Monkey Man. It's a more complex movie than I was expecting.
And that was Nathan giving us his reaction to the film Monkey Man. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And earlier in the show, Nathan, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed both the screen unseen feature that we saw and the documentary Richland. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the young adult author, Melody Bremen. I don't much like surprises, unless it was cake. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.